Bach's birthday bash is something that we've done on the Koschmar organ in Merrill Auditorium over the last few decades. And in fact, lots of people have taken that title. And a few weeks ago, I was Googling to see if it was just us who had used it or other people. And now it seems that everybody's calling it a Bach birthday bash to celebrate his birthday. But I think we were, if not the original, then one of the first few to coin that. And it's really an excuse to celebrate with the music of Bach, played on the mighty Koschmar organ. And the organ and J.S. Bach are two of those matches just made in heaven. And he knew that when he was writing for the organ, and we've had that ever since as organists and audiences to be able to enjoy this extraordinary music.
You know, I know you dreamt about this, playing this organ when you were young, and now you're actually getting to play one of the master organ composers of all time on one of the great organs in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm speaking to a biased audience, I expect, here, but most people would agree that Bach is probably the single greatest composer of all time, and that's not something that one says lightly, because we have Mozart, we have Beethoven, we have everyone, you know, before and after, but Bach is the master. And it's so wonderful that he sort of legitimizes the pipe organ, which otherwise is sometimes seen as this, you know, sort of instrument that's on the margins. It only happens in church when you have funerals or sad, slow.
Or everybody skates.
Yeah, exactly.
Singles only, you know.
At the ball game, exactly. So Bach is one of those composers that allows us to say, no, look, we are main stage players here. Yes, you have symphony orchestras, we have grand opera, we have, you know, the great chamber music of the 19th century, but we have organ music by Bach, and he brings us, allows us to come to the table with all those big sort of art forms and say, no, we're as great as any one of you.
There's a great visual on the Friends of the FOCO website,
yeah,
and it's where you have, and I've seen a lot of these lately, but you have a clip of, it's the Bach Little Fugue, I think,
mm-hmm,
and then it gives that visual.
Yes.
And it's just where you see what a genius he was at counterpoint. You can hear it, but to have that visual and see how he balances these two lines is so amazing.
It is. And counterpoint is the word, I think. If we were to talk about the one thing that Bach did and the way that his music speaks to us now, it's through counterpoint, which mostly for him was for fugues. So he wrote hundreds of fugues, a lot of them for the pipe organ, lots of them for the keyboard, not really the piano because it wasn't invented as such then, but for the harpsichord and the clavichord and, as I say, for the organ. And counterpoint was where Bach was the true master. And if you don't know what that is, it's really good to visualize, as you're saying. This video that I've seen has all of the voices. We call them voices even though no one's singing the music, but it's written out very strictly, and Bach manages to transcend all of these mathematical rules and theories.
Yes.
And you would never know that it's counterpoint. You would never know this is a construct, something that's been man-made. It just seems like it was always there.
What are you specifically, you're doing something kind of interesting, because you always do. With Bach, you're going to spin it a little bit on its head?
You know, we're always trying to reinvent our programs, because we can do that nowadays and think about music in more creative ways than perhaps 50 years ago when they would have just played a bunch of pieces in succession. So I really wanted to think about what Bach meant to me as an organist, which is pretty much everything, but also which pieces of Bach always struck me as particularly moving. And for us organists, he arranged some concertos by Antonio Vivaldi in the first part of the 18th century. His boss essentially went and got all this music that was published in the Netherlands, but it was by composers like Albinoni and Vivaldi, and threw it on Bach's desk one morning and said, hey, you know, this is the new Italian style. I want you to write music like this. So the way that Bach wrote and how people did things in the 18th century, they just copied. They reproduced, they learned from the masters or whoever they were told to learn from, and then they would start to assimilate this into their music. So part of this program is based on two things. One is the transcription idea, so taking music for one set of instruments or maybe for a solo instrument and then arranging it for another. And then this idea of the Italian sort of takeover of the 18th century, when everyone was going crazy for Italian music and it was the best thing since sliced bread, even though they didn't really have sliced bread then. and Bach went for it, and it shows us how his creative mind worked, that he didn't just get all this stuff from, you know, some angel up in heaven that said, right, you're going to write this. He was working to make his craft better and to adapt it and to always make it grow. And we can see that. So I'm playing an own transcription of mine. So I played Bach at his own game of the Italian Concerto, which was really the title is Concerto in the Italian Taste.
Right.
The Italian style. And this is Bach publishing a piece of his own. He's not copying anyone, but in the Italian concerto style. So the full orchestra sections versus the small solo sections, except his is just for the harpsichord. So you have the two keyboards. The lower keyboard is louder. The upper keyboard is quieter. That's the solo version. And I thought, well, I'm going to just take this and put it on the organ. I think this is probably the first time it's ever been performed on the organ, which is crazy.
That's exciting.
It makes a lot of sense, but...
And what else? What else will be on the program?
So I'm starting the program with another transcription by Bach, which is the first movement of a cantata. It's the 29th cantata, and the title is Wir danken dir Gott, We Thank Thee God. And I love this piece, partly because it has these exuberant trumpets and timpani and what Bach would have really seen as a festival orchestration. It's the first movement, the opening symphonia, that just the orchestra plays before the choir comes in. And I've always thought this would work well transcribed for the organ. And there are a couple of people who had already transcribed this in the early 20th century, in the mid-20th century, but it didn't quite have that Bachian sense of orchestration about it. It was more turning it into a serious keyboard piece. So I wanted to bring back some of the exuberance of the orchestration, so I made an arrangement of this. And it really plays to the strengths of the Kochmar organ.
I was just thinking, You're going to be able to pull out all the... bells and whistles,
quite
so to speak, right?
Literally,
Oh, that's great.
It's pretty cool. And this piece has an extra layer because Bach didn't work for a church. He worked for the city council. And I don't work for a church. The Merrill Auditorium isn't a religious space. It happens to have a pipe organ, but it's a concert organ. And I work for the city of Portland. So in many, many ways, there are parallels between my position as, organist of the city and Bach's position as organist in Leipzig in the 1720s and until he died. And this
must bring you great joy when you think about it.
It's pretty awesome. The best bit about this piece is it was written for the opening of the town council. And what they did then essentially is approve the budget for the year. So this is Bach's nod to the town council folk saying, thank you, wir danken dir Gott, we thank thee God, because they essentially gave him his budget, said, okay, you can do this and have these instrumentalists and these musicians. So this was his way of saying, thanks, guys.